So just putting in the fence and the brown.
We've all had a look through it and we'll do the best we can. Given that I've missed the noise chapter, I can't claim to digest everything that's in there.
No, that's okay. We understand because there are quite a few changes. So.
Yeah, so then we pick up the key one in terms of site coverage and the traffic assessment and comment as best we can on those.
Yes.
So I'll hand you over to Mr. Brown to do a summary.
Thank you. Perhaps I'll start from paragraph 2.
Yes.
The commercial tourism recreation subzone area is significantly greater than the total footprint area for the upper terminal building upgrade. Now, I'm now not sure what the 15% coverage, how that relates to the existing resource consent coverage.
I did the calculation this morning, it's 1.09 hectares. So somewhat bigger than the building.
Okay. Before I saw these, I was just sort of taking 35% of this new expanded zone area, which is the dotted blue line, and you know, taking a third of that is a lot of building. even taking even a third of that, again, you're still talking about a lot of building. But 1.09 hectares, so yeah, a hectare of coverage. I'm not sure, there was a mention just before about the height having some relationship with that, but the height being 10 metres, but that doesn't really affect the footprint. They could apply a discretionary and go 20 metres or whatever it is, so yeah. So I could, in paragraph 2, I could still anticipates a large area and volume of potential built development. Maybe we could just remove the word "very" in the last sentence.
If we change 35 to 15.
Yes. And in paragraph 3, I say the effects of this have only been lightly examined by Skyline, and for their liberalness, I consider that far more examination of the impacts of the zone, including on the reserve's amenity values, traffic effects, and direct effects on other reserve users, is necessary. Greater assessment is necessary also to understand whether the zone enables development that accords with the reserve management plan. And that management plan has various objectives, for example, protection of the reserve's natural and quiet values, provision for recreation and tourism activities that don't adversely impact on the landscape, recreation and natural values of the reserve, and the vision statement is to protect and enhance the natural values of Ben Lomond Reserve and provide opportunity for compatible recreation activities. And there's difficulty in reconciling the special this subzone with the RNP because of the potential scale of the development that is not anticipated by the RNP, and this difficulty is exacerbated by the paucity of evidence. Just in your dialogue with Mr. Young, I would just note there that the RMP is still the instrument that tells the council whether to grant leases or not for various activities. There's no other instrument than the RMP for that. So it probably has greater weight than, say, a strategic plan that's promulgated generally, you know, not under any particular statute, but this is promulgated under a statute, and it does have weight in my view because it's how the council decides to lease land or not. So in paragraph 5, in my view, the subzone would enable development that is inconsistent with the RMP provisions, and inefficiencies and planning difficulties would arise if the subzone is not consistent with the RMP, because in addition to the duplication of processes, it could well be that one instrument may be enabling a proposal, but the other instrument may be disabling the same proposal. And this puts the council and the other interested parties, such as neighbours, in a potentially conflicting position. I agree in principle with the concept of an updated, improved approach for managing the Ben Lomond area. One method may be a comprehensive review of the RMP, which is outdated. Another method may be a spoke zone, which would need to encapsulate and properly deal with the RMP and all of the other relevant issues before it could be adopted into the district plan. So proper Section 32 evaluation is necessary. A range of reasonably practicable options should be identified, such as the status quo or the subzone or similar, or updating the RMP, or a hybrid of the subzone crafted with more cognizance of the RMP, or a policy approach as suggested by Ms. Evans. These would need to be evaluated as to their effectiveness, efficiency, cost, benefits, and so on in line with Section 32. The evaluation might identify that the most appropriate method is a bespoke zone that is based on a structure plan that delineates certain activity areas with corresponding development standards and addresses related matters such as car parking. I'm aware that the Council is currently formulating Stage 2 of the district plan to be notified later this year. A chapter for open space and recreation has already been drafted, and the Council planners have consulted with interested parties, including myself, about a fortnight ago. The chapter deals with the Council's reserves, including for the Ben Lomond Reserve. In my view, this comprehensive approach to addressing the zoning of and provisions for reserves is more appropriate than the ad hoc nature of Skyline's approach, because all of the valid issues can be incorporated and evaluated, and an integrated management outcome is more likely. Having said that, the draft chapter I've seen does not yet adequately address the particular and unique circumstances of Ben Lomond. Ben Lomond is different to all other recreation reserves in that it has substantial development and greater intensity of activity. The chapter would need to recognise the existing environment and promote provisions for successfully managing the effects of activities within that environment for all users. In my view, it should at least address the matters I listed in paragraph 2.6 of my primary statement, including how it coordinates and integrates with the RMP, adjoining land uses and the town centre, and in particular potential traffic issues. I therefore maintain my view that Skyline's current subzone is not an appropriate planning method. A wider Section 32 evaluation is necessary, and I support the Council's approach to dealing with reserves in a specific PDP chapter to be promulgated in Stage 2, which I understand is to be notified in November. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Dealing with your last point, in developing this new reserve zone, aren't it going to be necessary to grapple with the same reserves management plan as the current process?
Yes, I think it should, because it's our
it's the same process. Essentially, in order, it still has to have regard to that reserve management plan, and it's still the same reserve management plan, so that doesn't change. So how are we going to be better off in this?
I think the reserve management plan needs to be updated as part of whatever package the Council is proposing, to avoid the problem that I see of having one instrument being enabling of something and another instrument perhaps not being enabling of the same thing.
Your difficulties appears to me to be that nothing obliges the Council to do that.
From a legal perspective, if they promote a zone and they have a reserve management plan, which is their document, I think they would be on shaky ground coming to you without having assessed how that zone stacked up against that document in a full way.
Yeah, but is that any different to what they're doing today?
My view would be they haven't taken a close enough look at it today.
No, I know that's your view.
Yeah, and hopefully if the Council is promoting its own, they would. And they'd address it in detail, and they'd say either we're going to review it because our zone is not consistent with it, or the zone we're proposing is, and we're comfortable with it.
So cutting to the chase, in paragraph 5, you speculate about what would happen if one instrument may be enabling and the other isn't disabling the same problem? Is that what you're saying? Is the reserve management plan actually disabling of what Skyline are promoting?
I think the reserve management plan could go a bit further to the enabling of the skyline.
But is it disabling of it? What is it about the present reserves management plan that creates difficulties for the skyline proposal? Specifically?
Yeah, it enables buildings and it recognises the current skyline facilities, but it doesn't have anything about a large-scale expansion of those. Nor, for that matter, does it talk about Ziptrek or the cycling or lots of other of those activities. There's been lots of progress up that hill, but the RMP...
In spite of the RMP?
Despite it?
In spite of it, or just... I mean, have all those things happened since the RMP was promulgated?
Yes, they
have. More recently. Yeah.
All the more reason I think that the RMP should be reviewed too, so that it actually can catch up and so that it actually got a better vision of the future of it.
Yeah, but that just gets back to my problem that, that nothing requires the council to do that.
If the council do nothing though, that is something you can take into consideration in section 74 and say, well, we have a zone put in front of us, the council hasn't done its work on the reserve management plan, that causes us difficulty.
If it does cause us difficulty, and that's what I'm trying to get from Mr. Brown. So what is it about this plan that is causing the difficulty?
It's just simply that it doesn't really recognise what's up there very well.
But it wouldn't need to, because at the time it was written, it wouldn't have been able to anticipate what's up there. So it needs to be more general than that. It needs to define the values and the conditions that it's trying to protect.
Yes, and it does that, like protection of the reserve's natural and quiet values and provision of recreation and tourism that don't adversely impact on the landscape, recreation and natural values of the reserve. So the question is, does this expanded skyline proposal meet those objectives or not?
Well, let's just take that word quiet. The gondola and a certain amount of what's happening up there was there in 2005. Well, most of the existing gondola operation was there in 2005. Mm-hmm. So probably all of it.
Yes.
It's not silent.
It's not
silent.
No. There's nor the helicopters and
The helicopters were landing. The helicopter was there.
Yeah, but if we're expanding by many hundreds of thousands, all of the activity up there, many hundreds of thousands of visitors on a yearly basis, which is, I think, is what I anticipated, certainly from the resource consent. And if this is greater, then even more so. Do the objectives of the reserve natural and quiet values and not adversely impacting on landscape, recreation, natural values still stand, or should they be reviewed, reconsidered?
So we heard this morning that over the last couple of years, the number of visitors numbers have gone up by, I don't know what it was, 100,000, 200,000 annually, and that is expected to continue, even with no further development up there. So that's what we were told this morning, that's not the question.
So who's it, sorry, and...
Oh, I think Mr. Dent gave us that as an aside.
That's not in the evidence,
though. Yes. Well, because we were told
submissions, actually.
Yeah. Positive, right, it's positive.
I mean, it's going up anyway. Is the fear...
it's a relevant piece of data.
So, is, in fact, expansion something totally new and unanticipated and it's going to create an enormous problem, or are Skyline actually trying to do what they do better and deal with what they've got and just deal with all those people more effectively?
I think the latter is true, but then the question for me is still, is that in line with the RMP or not? And when I look at the vision statement and the objectives, I don't think it is.
Well, but then in that case they would have to be trying to put some sort of cap on it now.
Well, I've said here, and I agree in principle with the concept of an updated, improved approach, and that finally I think the council's method of doing so is preferable, but it needs to include something like what we're talking about today, so that it's looked at holistically in terms of all of the reserves, given that it's all council land.
But even looking at it from the council's point of view, they're just looking at something that is going to continue to grow and grow and grow, even if Skyline do nothing at all.
Sorry to speak, we didn't have any independent expert saying that the existing development is under pressure and is bursting at the seams. I haven't seen that in the fine. I apologise, Neil, I haven't seen that.
No, and I haven't seen it either, but what I'm saying is that, I'll bring to you, that if Skyline do nothing at all,
yeah,
that growth will continue, and the effects that the ZJV are concerned about, or some of them will happen anyway.
You might be right about that, but what we get back to is, that's an interesting number to hear. It's the certainty, and understanding what's proposed and what the numbers are and what the number of users might be, and everything that falls out of that. So if we are talking about 100,000 people growth in a couple of years...
Or more.
Then you might test, really? Yeah. How many people are you moving at the moment? Is that feasible? Is that true? That's a difficulty with this. If you had an expert saying, these are the numbers we had in 2005, this is what we got in 2015, this is how many we can move per hour, this is how many people we have on the loose per hour, you could start to stack this up and say, well, there is capacity in the zone, or there isn't. And you might accept, well, we should put a cap on it because it's desirable. And then you work out how much more capacity you need. But I've never seen any of that. It's a certainty and the evidence that sits behind a rezoning that enables you to evaluate what you need to do or what your response is. I'm not trying to just mean for Mr. Brown, for me, I'd have loved to have seen that information if it's there.
See, a parallel, and this is maybe a diversion, but I've done that in Christchurch recently. I've done a series of hearings for reconstruction, redevelopment of BP service stations, and the locals loathe them and they think they're doing it to capture a bigger share of the market. And BP come along saying, we are not. You know, we're getting crowded. We're getting congested on our forecourt. We just want to handle our share of the market more comfortably for us and for our customers. And it's pretty hard to argue.
Well, if there's a growth pressure that's of concern in terms of how you manage it sustainably, one response may be to provide more capacity, and the other might be, and we've had a discussion about this previously, Sarah, about whether you look at capacity.
Mm.
We haven't talked about where the equilibrium lies, and then equally, if we're talking about growth like that, well, what does that mean for the quiet enjoyment of amenities? Those are new numbers for me, and they're big numbers. So what does that mean? I don't know what Mr. Yeo has, but that's the information you should have had from suitably qualified experts to enable you and the submitters to fairly assess this application and engage people to respond to it. And whether that's right or wrong, I think there's a difficulty in it being presented orally by council, not in written evidence, so that people can understand that. I talked about economic evidence. That's a significant piece of information to sit behind this rezoning.
Mm.
Not one that you should log up orally, in my submission, certainly. That for me is a problem more than the actual information itself.
Well, the chairman's saying exactly the numbers were in the submission itself.
And the primary submission.
I must say,
if they are immaterial, then that's why my submission I made to you falls away.
No, they're not. Sorry, I just stand corrected.
I don't know.
This morning. Yeah.
So I need to make that acknowledgement that if it is in there. But even then, you need an appropriately qualified person to tell you about that, what that means. Whether that's growth that can be accommodated or not, from someone who understands these things.
Point is actually that its growth, it is what it is, and it can't be stopped. It's going to happen anyway.
Well,
natural growth within the existing consent framework, and as Andrew pointed out, the existing capacity of the machinery.
And I'm not sure, Mr. Brown, would I clarify whether the resource consent application actually increases capacity on the Gondola line as well?
Yes, it does.
So you've got a consent application that's, I don't know whether Skyline are talking about their new proposal and how they're going to be able to do more, or whether they're talking about their existing operation. because we know the building's considerably bigger, and it's approximately doubles in size. So what is it we're talking about in terms of that capacity? I take your point about growth, it's going to be this demand, and you would have heard about that from a lot of people. I don't know if I can take it any further in terms of that should be presented in the proper way. Tested in the proper way.
Okay, your point's wrong, mate. You've turned my question back on me to something.
No, the difficulty sits with you. I don't have to make the decision, and it puts you in a difficult position, not me. Well, less so, in turn, we like to respond fully, but it puts you as decision maker in a difficult position.
Okay, we probably can't take that much further, but a slightly related but slightly different question, Mr. Brown. And I ask Mr. Young the same. Does this reserves management plan actually contradict itself? Has it got an internal conflict within it? Given that at the time it was written, the gondola existed. So everything that's there today was there then when the reserve management plan was enacted, and the reserves management specifically recognises it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it talks about quiet enjoyment, it obviously didn't mean quiet enjoyment or total peace and tranquility on that particular part of the reserve. Maybe in other parts, probably 95% of the reserve, it's a great deal quieter and less conducive.
I don't think it's internally consistent. I think
think it's internally consistent?
No, I don't think it's internally consistent because it does recognise things. I think it could just recognise the differences in that reserve a lot better.
Yeah.
So that if you like, there's different types of activity scattered through the zone, from the intense commercial area of skyline through to complete wilderness. I think it's more weighted to the wilderness stuff, even though it does recognise the skyline part of it. And I think the skyline part of it could be a lot better enunciated with objectives and as part of any vision.
Isn't that just a function of the reserves? The Reserves Act and what recreation reserves are for, rather than the reality of what is there. And the reserve management plan reflects the requirements of the Act.
Yes.
So the discontinuity may not be in the reserves management plan, it may be in the council's leasing behaviours and decisions. It's the only other place you
can look. You want that.
Quite possibly, yes.
Are those the more environmental considerations even a factor for the Reserves Act compared to what they are under the RMA?
I think they are.
The Reserves Act's not there to duplicate the RMA.
No, but there's...
Or to set up a parallel land use planning procedure.
Well, that's an interesting point, because when I look through the RMP, I see objectives, policies and rules that are quite similar to what you'd expect out of a district plan.
Well, you and I were both probably in local government at the time the Reserves Act was enacted, and we looked at this sort of stuff and thought, how do we do this?
I don't think Mr. Brown's quite that old.
You probably dabbled with them. In your time in local government, you've probably dabbled with reserve management plans. Come across them.
Yes.
It's enhanced. Probably little wonder that they do somewhat affect plans under the RMA.
The more recent, a recent experience I've had with reserve management plans is the Wanaka Lakefront Reserves Plan, which is a 2014 document, which was quite heavily relied on by the Environment Court this year for the Wanaka water sports application on the waterfront. So they have their role. And certainly the court in that case was very cognizant of it. But that was an updated version of a older plan, I think, from the maybe 10 years ago, I can't remember, or 10 years previous to that one.
Our previous experience of the interplay between the RMA and the reserve management plan was the Hagley Oval at Christchurch, where both sides were cheerfully quoting the reserve management plan in support of their case. All the time.
Yeah, the district plan too.
Yeah. And they were both right.
Hmm.
So, of course, the Environment Court just assessed the thing on its merits.
I was just going to say that in terms of even if you do find you're of the view that the Reserve Natural Plan was a bit tired and didn't reflect the current state of play, you've still got amenity values in Section 7.
Yes.
You've still got Acts 8 in Section 6, and you've still got
Social
12 and in part 2 in Section 5. So the kind of issues that mightn't be as well articulated as your Hope and Reserve Management Plan still there for assessment, and what we come back to. Why I think the Reserve Management Plan is going to focus our submission on what I think what is integration with adjoining uses, and that integration aspect is a concern to Ziprecker's neighbouring owner and the reserve management plan. At least gives you some overall indication of the kind of outcomes. They might be too highly stated, they mightn't reflect that the parts of the reserve management plan, but they give some guidance in terms of overall outcomes. But I take your point, I think it's a helpful discussion. And I go back to Commissioner Cheswick Chairman Nugent's point and what I think about that. Mr. Graham, it's a very good point about a lease instrument. Mm-hmm. However, there's plenty of case law that outdated documents don't reflect current thinking, get less weight. I'm trying to make from that proposition.
Several of Judge Shepherd's
yes.
Environment Court decisions making those sorts of comments.
And we used to come at it from the point of view that even notified documents that might not have gone the full way through, still being current statements of counsel that keep were important too. Mm-hmm. So it's the corollary of that position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still good law, still good position.
The notified plans which better reflect the RMA than the previous one.
We've had lots of arguments about weight, and it's sort of gone away a little bit more recently, but unless there was something obviously controversial or incorrect or problematic, we could put weight on these most recent statements that our councils intend, particularly if the other document is particularly old.
A couple of other questions which you may prefer to defer to Mr. Yeo, Mr. Yeo, but Mr. Brown might like to have a go at it. Firstly, is there a concern, can I put this to Mr. Dent, about why only part of the Is it pre-operation was included in the subzone? Is that a concern? Oh, you've mentioned it, Mr. Young. No, it's
different. Mr. Young, he's not going to read the statement. I mean,
if between the three of you, you can answer that. That would appreciate.
From a legal point of view, I think there is, because of lack of immigration or as Mr. Brown's put it, consideration of an option, an alternative you would have considered in Section 32, because that's part of a tourism use that reflects the objectives and policies of this zone. So you at least would have thought about it, should we put it in. It hasn't been done, so that's the concern for me. And then having thought about it, you'd think about integration. But from an operational point of view, or
I can address that.
You can go now if you want.
Oh, yeah, so.
Sorry, sir, is that all right?
So Zetrix, it's extremely light impact on the land, and so one of the things is we have tree houses, literally built in existing trees, and we travel from tree to tree, and so we have zones like the circular zone of the tree, and then inside that we have like access requirements in between. So it's unusual in this scenario. I'm not sure even if the plans as suggested actually are overlapping some of our unmarked zip lines as such, which is a concern. Do we have concern that part of it are in a zone and part of it not? Probably, like it's pretty inconsistent, but what are you going to do? Are you going to cover the whole area that we cover, or are you going to cover just the circular bits? you could say it offers us opportunities to do things under these conditions at the top area, which is basically where most of the commercial exchange happens,
yes.
As in our treehouse, our check-in, that sort of stuff. I don't know, we haven't been, no one's really talked to us about what we thought of that, and the suggestion was sort of put out without our discussion.
Yeah, that was Mr. Dean's point. The top of the treehouse is the largest part of it, and the part where it all begins, and all that initial briefing and interchange takes place, and people gather, and then the rest of it is very lightweight, as you say, compared to that. And the top treehouse is in close proximity to the Starlight operation, whereas the rest of it starts to get well away from it. I think that's what I took from what he was saying.
I have in my discussion, there's some primary concerns I have, and one of them is that the areas that the zone is expanding to, I'm not sure if everyone's kind of assuming that then Skyline will assume that land for its use for commercial recreational activities, for example. And what I find hard to respond to is the idea that it's just a zone that's just marked in a map, and it significantly surrounds us, and in fact, in this case, as you've suggested, it envelops us. And so I don't know what the effect of the new zoning will have on our business, which trades on being at the edge of an access area. It's not a saleable item to be at the edge of a commercial area. And I know that commerce and the exchange of money is one concept, but shops and that sort of level of urban development doesn't sit with what we think we should be handling and what we consider to be relevant and referred to in the management plan. So once again, I feel like this sets up a huge grey area for us to then again get these awesome experts to me being in a court again, like again, because this inconsistency and basically the open, it's like relying on council to handle their responsibilities for leasing has been very, very, very difficult for us since we opened in 2009. And we're a small fry organisation compared to someone like Skyline. We can't afford to do this. So we think that if you open up this zone, you're opening up the doors for something that we don't know that we'll have to fight in court again. And we think it is inconsistent and doesn't represent the intent of the reserve. Not only the ability for one to make money from business, that's a fair and reasonable point, but there's public values, there's access values. This is the heritage walk to Ben Lomond, which has not ever been considered or mentioned in any of the documentation. And the area is very different now. It's commercial, but I can say since 2006, let's say, it has changed, not significantly in volume, but also in diversity of use. There's now mountain biking there, which is probably 100,000 to 150,000 people movements, which is not even mentioned here. There's significantly more volume of everyone else. And as with all resources on Earth, there's more conflict in people use and resource use. And we have to manage them in a holistic way. And this is an example of opening the doors to a lot of legal work for us to try and defend the natural values and amenity values of that site. I went further than I was asked to.
That's fine, because I was going to ask you to go there anyway for the next question, which is your big concern, or your fear, or your dread, or whatever word this fits, what else might crop up there now they've got this? If they're going to have a bit more land or not.
Significantly. Yeah. It's kind of like, imagine you live in a house and then somebody decides to put it on the empty block of land and they want to change it into commercial. And you're going, I don't know what they're going to put there. I don't think that's a good idea. That seems like a bad idea to me because I live here. And that's kind of how it is.
So you're living with what you know and wondering whether...
You're opening doors to unlimited potential. And we just think, so we're not unreasonable about that. We think that there should be some development and that growth will happen. The question is how do you manage that growth? And so what rules can you put in place so that it's reasonable for all users and for the many users that are silent, particularly public on this, for all users to actually have a say that we in Queenstown are facing a situation of over-tourism. And it's something that I'm talking to the Tourism Industry Association, DOC, and Tourism Industry, Tourism Export Council about. I'm on boards to deal with this sort of stuff. And this is a classic case of if you create rules that open doors, then you create huge challenges for little people like me who have to try and defend their way in what we think is a reasonable stance on tourism. We like numbers, we like tourism, we like activity, don't get us wrong, but absolutely this opens doors that we cannot close again.
I appreciate you didn't get much time to work to look at the amended package of rules.
We hope you didn't miss anything quite big, I suppose.
No, but you're still not satisfied that it does enough to manage growth up there.
We've lobbed that principally on Mr. Brown, but you can
From us, the site coverage particularly, the extents of the application are surprising and shocking to me. There's two elements here. One is a change in zone. The second is a change in the area of use of that zone. And there seems to be an assumption, which is not necessarily stated, that Skyline will therefore then apply for leases to use that new zone that they don't currently lease for something else, which we don't know. The area to the west, where that road is to the west of the site. This area surrounds the northern side of us and it's uphill side of us. Anything that happens in that zone, we will be significantly affected by. We currently walk up that road as part of our tour. And if we have lots of activity in that area, that's going to significantly affect not only the amenity values, but actually the health and safety of our guests.
That's the area that's up in that sort of left, top left corner.
Correct, the top left side.
Where the trees are, and with the tracks down through them.
Yeah, the road that was illegally put in Pascal.
Yeah, we walked down through that on our side.
So that was not an approved road when they put it in.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you where on the site does Skyline have the opportunity to do anything significant?
Well, that's the site.
That would be the site.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure exactly even with you, and I know you guys have to cover so much ground, because you might not even know where Zitra is, and that's a bit of concern.
We saw it. We did explore that area down to the side of the Louvre.
What I'm saying is the area just down to the south here, I'm not sure whether our tree houses actually go within that zone, which has been proposed. And our area is not marked, and Skyline do have our GPS locations. So it'd be good to see that overlay, and it seems like an oversight not to have that. But if we're enveloped in this zone in one of our tree houses, that's possibly a concern for us, and very much an inconsistency. And what we found through the documents, and me knowing a lot more about the systems around us that control all these things now, is there's been a lot of inconsistency. And I agree with you that some people can take one piece of one policy and somebody can take another policy and they're completely contradictory. And I'm left in the middle, in the court, trying to get people like this to state our view. But the intent of the reserve is missed, like completely missed. And that concerns me. And that's why our light on the ground, multiple use friendly. So we have paragliders go over top of us, we have hikers and bikers go below us. We're basically almost a silent activity. We can deal with all that stuff. But my concern is commercial means, what does that mean? Does that mean a bowling alley? Or does that mean skeet shooting? Like flat bird shooting? Like I don't know what that means. And all of those things, we're not afraid of it on its current merits. We just feel it opens up the door for anything.
within the limits of the available land.
Correct.
I mean, just looking at that.
Which significantly affect us because
just
it's
to
so
look, I mean, looking at just looking at that diagram, for example, the bulk of it is taken up with the roof, isn't it?
The current lease area?
Yes. Well, the whole area within the blue dashed line, the overwhelmingly largest thing there is the luge.
The luge?
Yes.
The luge is only in the current lease area. The road to the left.
But in terms of 15% of that whole site, whole upper site, so because nobody's going to build anything on the corridor, so the 15% is going to mostly happen in that top area.
Is that an assumption or a stated fact, though, that no one's
going
to build
anything? Well, it's just practicality, really. Nobody's going to put in the central corridor part.
I can think of 10 activities that could go in that corridor part.
Yeah, but not buildings.
Yes, correct. They're not buildings.
Yeah, exactly.
But they will be commercial activities.
Yeah, we were talking about the site. I was only talking about the site coverage and the 15%.
Okay, I understand. Yeah,
so, in terms of a major buildings that you could put in that upper area, it really is limited to that triangle.
So, can I just clarify that question, make sure we're on the same page? The 15% in terms of overall site would include the corridor as well.
It was explicitly only the Bobsby portion of the top. And I just should be clear that we're looking at diagram A attached to Mr. Dink's summary provided this morning.
We are, we're on the
yeah.
The
yeah. Yeah, which is easier to follow than
okay.
The area of photographer. Yeah.
And the corridor is excluded for commercial recreation activities too.
It's just
the covered. Right, yeah. Is it a mountain coaster, the building? That's what I'm wondering. But there's a thing called a mountain coaster. Maybe you slip on, yeah, like a luge, but you're on like a roller coaster, so then you go upside down. I don't know if that's a building for the purposes. And that's what we were, because there's a lot. There's
I can think of 10 activities that can go in that area, and they're not buildings.
Yeah.
Okay. But what concerns me is that it is. Like, I think how much is too much is the question we can ask ourselves, and this is opening doors to...
Yeah, I'm just looking at the plan and wondering, you know, how much in terms of major expansion, how much physical space they've got to do, too much more of doing.
So I'm not worried about buildings, I'm worried about 10 activities. Like, definitely you could build other structures to get down that hill, and it includes larger scale luges, mountain coasters, other types of zip lines, other amusement devices. They're not buildings, they are things that you can make money on, and why would you not if it all becomes a commercial zone? It concerns us because how much can you develop this site? It is currently one of the busiest single tourism locations in New Zealand. Yes, it'll be that in the Sky Tower, but I think it's above the Sky Tower and it's above Milford Sound as well. There's a reason we've located up there.
Just one, and I'm reading with Mr. Brown an open-ended discussion about the ONLs and the fact that this is an ONL and it's not something you chose to address in your rebuttal evidence. I understand there was a lack of clarity, according to Mr. Brown, as to whether the rural, an ONL zone, rural zone and ONL provisions applied, but now you've heard that they do. Do you have to say anything?
Well, I'm pleased that they are. Meaning there's going to be more assessment of impacts on landscape values. That's what it means to me, rather than the list, which was just a simple assessment matter of location, external appearance and size. So I think that's an improvement and a welcome one. And looking at, I'm still looking at the slightly earlier version of the rules, but um, looking at Mr. Dent's latest paragraph 21-30 on is the assessment matters for landscapes. So all of those things would need to be assessed.
Well, would they all have the discretionary activity?
Yes.
That's, I think, the point of the question.
No, I haven't got to the point of the question. I was doing
that's another point,
an exploration.
No, it's a helpful discussion, because I'm not sure that they would, in terms of, because your discretion is restricted to the matters listed.
Yeah.
And we're doing this a bit on the hoof, just trying, so I apologise for the we
are in the same position, although we did hear it this morning. So,
look, 21-26 buildings, the rule there, council's discretion is reserved with respect to the following: location, external appearance and size. So I'd need to just check if how that then integrates with how these assessment matters for landscapes kick in, which are on page 21-30 onwards. But I would immediately think that there would need to be some expansion of the statement about what the council's discretion is reserved to, so that it probably better encapsulates all of those matters. I'm not sure what words I've used, but
you're fine with that? That's just, I just wanted to round up on our emails.
Thanks.
Okay, well, the only question I've got when I asked Mr. Dean this morning is: this an urban development provided for in this zone, in the subzone?
Without referring back to a definition, because I know there are some definitions floating around, I think you said it.
Can you just say why? What elements of it make it urban?
Well, very large scale buildings. If we're talking about 26 metres in height, well, I think that's 26 metres off ground level, but they're on level poles and things, but we're certainly talking about some big buildings and expansion thereof, and if we're talking about a possible hectare of coverage, even if scattered around that area, it's going to be a marked change. So you could call it an island of urban development, but it's clearly surrounded by lots of land which isn't urban. But certainly unto itself, I would think it's urban.
Sir, I wonder if Mr. Yeo have an opportunity just to make any further comment. And you might have questions for him on his evidence, too.
No, I didn't have any questions for him.
I know we shifted across two witnesses, but do you want
to? So one of my concerns, and it's been consistent throughout us being in courts, is we are concerned that anyone would have a part in approving the significant increase in volume in an area without a significant health and safety exit plan. What's happened in Christchurch and in many other places, particularly around fire, is one of the things that has always been a concern for us, and we have done with what we can within our context. But when you increase the volume of people into an area which has a helicopter to exit, a very bad road to exit and a gondola, then from a risk perspective, you're introducing people into an area which needs significant planning, coordination for exiting. We think that any opportunity to increase numbers up there, which they're consistently have been doing, which once again we're not opposed to, but we just think it requires a coordinated and significantly appropriate scale plan. And it's not something that should be done in hindsight. It should be done very at the front end of any design of a space. And it's not about detailing of windows. It's about planning. It's about fire breaks. It's about maybe finding another exit route. There's a whole lot of things that need to be done, and it seems to be very whimsical about the way in which everyone's saying, yes, that seems fine. There seems to be a demand, so let's just do this. We are in the same situation of exiting, and we have the same concerns, to be clear. We have our own plans in place, and but we, I just need to highlight that from a health and safety thing, and I was on the Tourism Industry Association for, board for safety in our industry of venture tourism, and it's one of the first things we would have thought, what are the big issues with something like this? Like, how do we get to the big issues, and then how do we nail them down so that we can be considered to be safe? Because culturally, economically, a large-scale concern up in that location, even an earthquake, would be a very bad thing, not only for the people up there, but also for the reputation of tourism in New Zealand. Literally, it is the biggest tourism location in New Zealand, and so it should be done with at a level of care and a level of forethought that will require a lot of people coming together, not just some harebrained thing you do at the end because you feel like you have to. So we would like to be part of that, and we would express that that's something that we'd be part of. In fact, there's many users out there, including public as well as commercial users. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I have no questions as a result of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. That's the case for ZJV. Mm-hmm. Slightly ahead of time.
Yes. Now, could our administrator please have that?
Yes,
back? Because I think that's the one that's going on the website.
Thank you.
And I will adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.